City both received overwhelming support in the election on April 5th. Both Orr and Maloney.
You're listening to CGSF 90.1 in Burnaby, British Columbia.
The federal election is on April 28th. Waking up for an early class? That's hard. Voting is easy. You can register and vote on campus from April 13th to 16th. And don't forget to bring accepted ID. Check elections.ca to find out where and when you can vote.
This is Sovereign Canada. I'm Mike McCullough. Broadcasting on CIVL, syndicated on campus and community radio stations across the country, and recorded on the shared, unceded, and traditional territories of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh peoples. Today on the show, author of The Resistance on Substack and former MP Charlie Angus talks about his cross-Canada resistance tour.
The response has been unlike anything I have ever seen in my life. The atmosphere at the Elbows Up resistance meetings have been electric. It feels almost a bit like a revival.
Angus also advises Canadians not to go to the States, stirs it up enough that I sought a statement from the former leader of the Reform Party, and he flips the bird at me during a short game of word association. Then, what parallels in Canadian history are there to this moment of nationalism to stand against the United States? Author and poli-sci professor emeritus at the University of the Fraser Valley, Dr. Ron Dart, joins me, and we'll discuss the power of nationalism.
The good of Trump, if there can be seen a good in Trump, he's resurrected Phoenix-like the best of the Canadian nationalist tradition, which has a very long history.
But you'll also hear Dr. Dart's warning against slipping into the void of extreme nationalism, you know, kind of like some folks tend to do in that country south of the 49th parallel. That's all ahead on this edition of Sovereign Canada, available to you at sovereigncanada.fyi. Thanks for joining me on this edition of Sovereign Canada. It's a packed show, and before I get to that interview with Charlie Angus, I gotta highlight the week that was U.S. President Donald Trump's turbulent trade policy announcements, which sent the world economy into a tailspin. Yeah, Trump's Rose Garden massacre to announce a slate of seemingly random numbers for tariffs on most countries, except for Russia. Strange, that one, Sent markets on a roller coaster ride, and then less than 24 hours after those tariffs came into effect, Trump announced that he would cut those duties for 90 days for most countries to 10%. Following that announcement, the U.S. stock indexes exploded. Like, for example, the Dow Jones jumped almost 3,000 points. That's like 7.87%. The reporting at this time indicates that Canadian and Mexican exports not covered by CUSMA remain subject to the so-called fentanyl-related tariffs, and Trump also said he would increase tariffs on China from 104% to 125%. This is like approaching embargo territory. And by the time you're listening to this, it all may be irrelevant. It may be ancient history to you. But I'm bringing it up because in the conversation I had with Charlie Angus, at the time it was recorded, that market rally on Wednesday had yet to occur. But who knows what's next? Did somebody say pump and dump? I don't know. The chat with Angus coming up after this short break. This is Sovereign Canada. Well, he may not be running for a seat in the federal election, but longtime member of parliament for Timmins, James Bay, author of The Resistance on Substack, and graduate of Punk Rock University, Charlie Angus has been everywhere, man. The Elbows Up Resistance Tour has zigzagged Ontario through London, Toronto, North Bay, Sudbury. And when this episode is published, he'll be in Courtenay, BC, Nanaimo tomorrow, Edmonton on Sunday. Yes, he's been everywhere, man. And you'll have to imagine that I'm singing that kind of like the great Hank Snow, Johnny Cash, or the lead singer of the Grievous Angels himself and friend of the show, Charlie Angus. Welcome to Sovereign Canada, Charlie.
Thanks so much to having me back.
Yeah, you know what? I got a lot of great feedback from your last appearance on the show, especially my mom. She really liked it. So if you could just say shout out.
Hi, Mom.
Yeah, thanks a lot. I just want to jump right into this. So can you just tell me about your cross-country tour and how the response has been so far?
The response has been unlike anything I have ever seen in my life. And I'm being inundated with calls. People are calling me to come to New Brunswick, Nova Scotia. We agreed to come in and do a quick one on Vancouver Island. And now I'm having people say, what about Kamloops? What about Prince George? What about Vancouver, Edmonton? People are saying, what about Calgary, Canmore, Saskatchewan? I don't really know how I'm going to do all this, but I know that there's a real desire. The atmosphere at the Elbows Up Resistance meetings have been electric. It feels almost a bit like a revival. Part of it is the excitement of Canadians coming together, and people really want to have a frame. They want language. They want to be able to talk about why the defense of Canada is so important at this time. So right now we're doing an in and out from Vancouver Island over to Edmonton. Then I'm back up in Northern Ontario, and then we're going to retool and start figuring out how we can actually start to do these meetings across the country and building this grassroots resistance.
And that's wonderful. And I don't think I've ever seen this country come together before in such a unified way against one great big opposable force in the way that Trump has united this country. What do you make of that?
What's really struck me is how the rest of the world is watching Canada. We really are the front line in the fight for democracy and the rule of law and the rule of international law right now, because Trump's threats to us are such an egregious abuse of everything that democratic countries stand for. And we see that other countries are still afraid to stand up. They're still trying to tiptoe around. They're still hoping that if quiet diplomacy will work. Quiet diplomacy is gone. Like, this is 2025 and we're dealing with a gangster regime. So while Europe is sort of downplaying and hoping they can work this out, Canada realizes this is an existential threat. And whether or not we saw our politicians standing up, and many of them are standing up in a very good way, but I think others less so. But ordinary Canadians across the board are ready for this fight, and we're going to defend our country.
Yeah, and what are folks telling you along the way? Can you focus in on one or two stories from people along your tour, that the things they've told you that have really resonated with you?
Well, I was invited to the founding chapter of an Elbows Up Toronto group just a couple of weeks ago. And the previous Saturday, there had been a massive Elbows Up rally organized by other people. Then there was, on the day that I arrived in Toronto, there was a huge protest outside the U.S. consulate, which I took part in. And we have footage of me having to deal with the police to explain that we are peaceful Canadians on our own soil, and Toronto is our property. And then I went to this church, huge church in Toronto, one of the biggest churches in Toronto, that this organized meeting, maybe in 5 days, public notice, the place was packed. And one woman got up and said an amazing story. She said how just terrified she was, you know, this whole doom scrolling, our sense of fear and our sense of isolation and aloneness. And she didn't know what to do. So she went and knocked on a neighbor's door to see, well, what are you thinking? And they went and knocked on another neighbor's door. And suddenly, from being isolated and alone and frightened, the whole neighborhood was coming together. And that, to me, is really part of what's making this important, because we've been so isolated from each other, so cut off, so disconnected, you know, through COVID, through disinformation, through doom scrolling, that the crisis Trump has forced on us is making us reach out to each other and reach out in ways that we hadn't thought possible. And it's ordinary people who are stepping up right now. And that, to me, is what's the invigorating, exciting, and historic moment that we're in.
Yeah, it really does seem like folks are waking up to this. You know, like, we saw these mass movements coalescing around the Tesla takedown here in Canada and elsewhere, and then the U.S. consulate protests like that you touched on in Toronto, and that's happening all across the country. And now that hands-off march that happened across the states April 5th and elsewhere. Just how heartened are you to see people waking up like this? And have you ever seen an analog for it in our recent history?
Well, it's interesting, you know, there's a book called If We Burn by an author who studies the huge rise of mass movements in the 21st century. There were mass movements all over the world that were mostly online, and most of them petered out very quickly because they didn't have roots. And it's something we always have to be aware of, is it's something that can rise up overnight and take everybody's attention, may not put down roots to survive. This, to me, feels different. This feels like we're taking back our community. We've certainly taken our flag back from the convoy haters. It's a recognition that we need to take steps in our personal lives. It's not just going to a meeting, but it's what we buy, it's what we do, it's how we interact. That's what's really exciting. I'm heading to Edmonton, and the place is packed. They're asking me to put on a second event. We've got over 400 people coming out in Edmonton. And I think part of it is that people in Alberta really want to reassure the rest of the country. They want to show their pride. They want to show that Albertans are as willing as everyone else to carry the load, despite what their Quisling premier is going around and saying to undermine the country. Ordinary Albertans, they are as ready for the fight as anyone. And I actually am really looking forward. I think that that's going to be a wild, wild event when we get to Edmonton.
In a way, it kind of reminds me of like what Bernie Sanders and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez are doing in the States, where they're doing a tour and they're showing up in Republican areas and filling venues. This is in a sort of same light where you're showing up in Danielle Smith's backyard, the capital of Alberta, Edmonton, and you're saying, we're here. So what kind of fire do you think that puts to the feet of folks in power in Alberta?
I think we really need to call out the Quislings. I mean, this is about them selling out our country. When Preston Manning writes an editorial and says, well, you better not vote for the Liberals or the country will break up. That kind of blackmail, telling Canadians that if they don't vote for Pierre Poilievre, that someone's going to break up their country, is outrageous. It is a slap in the face to democracy. But it also tells me that Preston Manning and Daniel Smith and the whole MAGA Maple crowd, they're straw warriors. They don't have the movement behind them to break up our country. But what they're doing is they're undermining us on the international stage and giving fire to Donald Trump and giving fire for his MAGA influences, which is what they play to. But I think the message you're going to see when we get to Alberta, and I'm looking forward to getting into Saskatchewan, is you're going to see people rising up and sending a message back, very strong message. Canada is not for sale. Canada is not a country of Quislings. Canada doesn't bend, and we don't kiss gangster rings, no matter how much Daniel Smith wants to suck up to him. You're going to see the people in the rest of the country stand together from Alberta to Quebec to the far north, to central, to eastern, to western Canada.
And the election is underway, and while the show is not necessarily focused on the election itself, but we are focused more so on defending Canadian values, Canadian ideals, and the idea of Canadian sovereignty, what should folks be most aware of when they're on social media in this time, when it comes to dis and misinformation set at us about the election?
We certainly are seeing a flood of disinformation, certainly on Facebook. I just encourage people to get off X altogether. It's a fascist platform. I think we need to stay cool-headed and stay focused. And I think this may be an election where we rise above the disinformation, whereas I've been very, very worried in the past about disinformation. One of the reasons I'm coming out to Vancouver Island is, you know, I've worked with Gord Johns, and here's a community activist top notch in terms of his passion and determination. He asked if I would come out and do resistance, elbows up, and I said certainly, because in the next election, in the next parliament, we need people who are not only going to resist the MAGA Maple Pierre Poilievre, but will stand up to build a better Canada. And there's going to be a lot of work, and it's going to be hard work. And that's, I think, what people need to focus on. What is it going to take to build Canada through this in a way that's progressive and not regressive?
Do you think people are buying it when Trump uses the sort of reverse psychology to say, Pierre's not a MAGA guy?
Well, we saw absolutely that Daniel Smith said that she reached out to Trump and said, hey, cool it. It's not looking good for helping Pierre Poilievre. We saw Steve Mahar, who's a respected journalist writing in the Toronto Star, that there were efforts or plans to try and reach out to the Trump team to say, disavow Pierre Poilievre in order to help Pierre Poilievre. The thing I found that with Donald Trump and what he's realizing is anything he touched turns to garbage. I mean, he had to come out and say that Wayne Gretzky was actually a loyal Canadian because his hugs of Wayne Gretzky trashed Wayne's reputation forever. Now he's coming out and saying he's not a friend of Pierre Poilievre after him and all his influencers have been saying that. I think they realize that the more Donald tries to interfere in the Canadian election, the more Canadians are going to resist, which is a really, really fascinating thing to see right now, because we see how much disinformation and interference is undermining democracy. I have written extensively about my concerns about democracy. I don't think we're out of the woods. I think the next 3 weeks, or the next 2 weeks, we will see a staggering level of interference and attempts to throw this election in a wrong direction. And I keep saying to Canadians, hold steady, hold the course. You know what's true. You know what we've got to do, and let's get this thing done.
That's why it's so cool to see folks getting out off the computers and out into the streets in real life, where, you know, a malign influence actor at, say, Russia can't necessarily touch you as easily as they could on a Facebook, on an X, on a social media platform of choice, right?
Well, it's something I wrote about and I've been speaking about a lot after the Trump election, is that we had to rewire our brains. We had to rewire our brains so that we weren't letting Mark Zuckerberg or Elon Musk control our thoughts and make us doubt each other, because we had grown isolated. We were sleepwalking towards a disaster, but now we're wide awake. And so after we stop the doom scrolling, then what do we do? Super important to get out and participate. I've talked to people. I had this incredible phone call from a woman in the little town of Barrie, Ontario, who had never done anything before, didn't know what else to do, thought she was going to hold a protest against Tesla because Elon Musk and his fascist ways really deeply offended her. And she was shocked. People came out. And I met a woman who went to that protest who had never done anything either. And she had her elbows up, hockey stick with her. And she said, and then we went to the next Tesla dealership. It's that meeting of people is what builds resistance. That's you can't change the world on Zoom. That's what we got to thinking, because after COVID, we got isolated and we got comfortable sitting in our jammies and, you know, going on the screen and then going off the screen. You can't do it on the screen. At the end of the day, you've got to get out. You've got to meet people. It's got to be messy. It's got to get loud at times. You got to disagree, but you're doing something. And keep moving, folks. Keep doing it. Keep moving forward. Start your local Elbows Up chapter. Maybe you just hold a rally in the town square. Maybe you try and you protest something. Maybe you go at the Tesla takedowns. Do something. Do anything. By doing that, you're building the grassroots, which pushes our politicians to remember they can't backslide at this point in standing up to Trump and tyranny.
Yeah, and the Tesla takedown was quite successful in slashing the Tesla share price, which a lot of folks point to. Hey, if you can pressure Musk through his companies, maybe you can pressure Trump. But now we have Trump scoring an own goal and shooting the economy directly in the foot with what he's done with these tariffs over the last little while. Have you ever seen any kind of self-inflicted wound on the economy of this magnitude? Like, people, working people are now in the crosshairs.
There's never been a situation where such a psychopathic narcissist has been allowed to have absolute control without any checks and balances, that he's actually just blown up the world economy. I don't know how many trillions have disappeared. I think $9 trillion since he came into power. Most of it's happening over the course of the last week. But here's the thing that's really important to note. On his so-called April 2nd liberation, which I think is more like a liquidation sale day, on that same day, four key Republicans changed their vote in the Senate to vote against the illegal tariffs on Canada. And those four Republican senators represented Maine, which is basically a sister province of Nova Scotia and New Brunswick. Their economies are so intertwined. So their Republican had seen directly the pressure of the Canadian boycott. Alaska voted, the Republican voted against Trump because they see the power of the Canadian boycott on their economy. And Kentucky, which has been hammered hard because Canadians were the number one bourbon market in the world and we absolutely refused to buy any of their products. So four key areas where the Canadian boycott is putting pressure have now turned on Trump. You're going to start to see MAGA fall apart at this rate. It may get worse. It may get uglier. But I think Canada is playing that role that the rest of the world's seeing. I don't think the rest of the world's leaders are standing up the way Canada has been. But Canadian citizens are leading the way in the massive boycotts, which is causing massive pressure, which is going to make Donald Trump's little empire a lot harder to sustain.
These boycotts really are something else, too. I was at the grocery store, I guess, last week, and the bags of California lettuce that are usually $5 were sitting on the shelf, a full shelf, mind you, for marked down to like $2.39, and they still wouldn't move. It's working, isn't it?
The boycott's phenomenal. I mean, you know, when you have 70% drop in air traffic between Canada and the United States in the month of March, the busiest month of the year, at the same time that ICE is dragging people out of airline lines and illegally kidnapping them and putting them in detention centers, you have just destroyed the American tourism economy on which millions of jobs depend. With Canada saying we aren't going back to the States, I'm hearing from people in Europe who said we're not going either, people in Australia who canceled trips. So you add the Canadian boycott to the absolute brutal disregard of the rule of law by ICE and Trump, and America's become an more isolated, a weaker, a more hated country. And that's not good. That's not good for the United States. It's not good for the world. But this is something that that narcissist brought on himself. And we cannot bend at any point along the way until this thing is done. We have to see this through. But my feeling is that Canadians get it. They're in this fight for the long haul. Every Canadian I've ever talked to is ready to do what needs to be done because it's about defending our heritage, our history. And, you know, it's the Juno Beach gene. Once we take on the fight, we don't stop till the job is done.
And in your final press conference as MP, actually, you warned Canadians not to travel to the U.S. and called on Global Affairs Canada to revise its travel advisory to reflect the danger that foreigners are facing when they enter the States under Trump. At the time we record this, the most recent update from the government was April 4th, advising Canadians of additional scrutiny at ports of entry and that folks may be detained if they are denied entry. But meanwhile, Global Affairs Canada has left the advisory as green, normal. Does that sound, any of that sound normal to you, Charlie?
I think it's a total abdication by Global Affairs Canada, which is why I held that press conference. The fact that they're warning, be careful about your phone because they'll seize your phone and search to see if you said anything bad about Donald Trump or you said anything positive about diversity. That's what happens with a totalitarian state. You may be detained. What do you mean you may be detained? We've had people kidnapped, chained, put in unheated cells without access to lawyers. That's what happens in totalitarian regimes. And for Global Affairs to pretend that it's green, it's not green, and Canadians aren't that stupid. But the interesting thing is that when I gave that that press conference, what I said got no pickup by Canadian media, but within a day, over a million people, or within 2 days, over a million people had seen it around the world. I was on Newsweek. I was covered in international media. And it was funny because they were saying that Canada had issued the warning, even though it was just me. But other countries started issuing warnings after that. So that press conference was an important thing to do, to say, listen, this is not normal times. This is not green light material. We are now dealing with a country that does not respect the rule of law, and Canadians can be at risk if they go there.
I'm never going there again, even if Trump's out, and I imagine you feel somewhat the same.
Well, I have so many people writing to me from across the United States, and if this was normal times, I'd be going down to resistance rallies in Colorado and Washington and New York. I'm not crossing the border. I'm going to end up in an El Salvadorian prison camp. And it's not right to cross the border. The boycott is the boycott. We maintain the boycott. Maybe someday I'll be able to, you know, have a drink on a patio in New York City in the summer. But I'm not expecting to do that in my lifetime. And I think that most Canadians recognize, well, we can do that in Montreal. We could do that in Vancouver. We could do that in Whitehorse. We have a beautiful country. So let's go to a place where the rule of law is respected and people respect each other.
Yeah. That petition you sponsored to strip Elon Musk of his citizenship, that died on the sort of chopping block when Prime Minister Carney called a snap election. But I understand it was the fastest growing petition in House of Commons history and the second most co-signed ever. What do you say to folks who signed on to that petition and to Nanaimo's Quelia Reid, who started it?
Well, this I think was really an important moment. Again, people knew that a petition doesn't strip someone of citizenship, nor should it. But it was about sending a message at an important moment. And the fact that so many Canadians had signed on, and if the election hadn't been called, it would have easily become the biggest petition in Canadian history. And it certainly got under Elon Musk's skin. I mean, he posted a stupid thing on X, that Canada isn't a real country. Okay, bro, then give us back our passport if you don't like us. So messages are important. And I think that what that did at that moment was to capture the determination of Canadians to say, we don't want people who are fascists. We don't want people who don't believe in the rule of law and who want to destroy public institutions. We don't want them associated with the Canadian identity in any capacity whatsoever.
Yeah, for sure. And if Canada's not a real country, then, you know, why are they asking us to enforce the border and, you know, all of this other stuff? It's just, it smacks of like total inconsistency, which, if you look at the history books, that's a mark of fascism, is when you have an opponent that's at the same time too weak but too strong, and on and on. So I think it's pretty clear what we're up against.
Yeah, I mean, we're dealing definitely, this is a different thing. You know, Marx said that history repeats itself first as tragedy, then as farce. There is a farcical nature to Trump, which makes him, I think, more dangerous, because I think people saw him as this clown as opposed to a predator. He's very much a predator. He's following very strong fascist tendencies. There's elements that are certainly playing the classic fascist playbook, but I've also been thinking lately that he's sort of like Stalin in 1937, minus the firing squads, because of his paranoia and his rooting out his internal enemies and his sort of public show trials of, he wants people to have to, you know, be shamed and apologized to, you know, and it's kind of like Stalin 37 minus the firing squad, but all show trials, you know, all paranoia all the time. And so you're dealing with someone who doesn't have checks and balances, and the rest of the American institutions are letting them do this. So whether it's him threatening to invade Greenland or him deciding to tank the global economy for no reason whatsoever, and he was allowed to do that, what happens if we get into a serious showdown with China over Taiwan, or a serious showdown where the Russians start moving in the Arctic? This is not the man that you want there. And this is not a country that can be trusted, because they don't have the checks and balances that a normal operating democracy must have in place to keep accountability in democracy. And there's no accountability right now.
I wanted to play a very quick game with you of word association. So when I say elbows, you say...
Elbows in your face? No, elbows up.
Right. Oh, so we'll continue on from there. I'll say Canada.
Canada strong.
Musk.
Muscolini.
Muscolini, I like it. Trump.
Trump. Narcissist, psychopath, fascist.
51st,
sorry. Okay, I would have said felon. That would have been better. Continue.
Yeah, for Trump. And 51st.
51st, never.
I thought you'd say that. Tariff.
Yeah. Tariff. Tariff this.
Oh, that's a middle finger for those of you who can't see as we're on the radio.
Tariff this. Yeah, tariff. I have a T-shirt that says tariff this. So that's, yeah.
I like that. Well, you know, we are sticking together over it, and hopefully we can navigate out of it. Diversity.
Diversity, equity, inclusion, the fundamental principles of being Canadian.
Yeah, you took my other two there. I was going to go through the three. But yeah, Charlie, you know, I really appreciate your time. Yeah. Anything you wanted to add before we say goodbye?
I'm just really excited to be back on Vancouver Island. I love the people on the island. And, you know, this is a moment where we've got to come together across Canada. So I'm hoping to see people out in big numbers. I'm pretty sure we will. And it's going to be spirited because Vancouver Island is Vancouver Island strong.
Yeah. And where can folks find you if they want to follow along and learn more?
Charlie Angus, The Resistance Substack. It's every day or every second day there's a new essay, a new thought, a new way of resisting. We're really trying to build also not just the grassroots resistance, but a frame of thinking about this, how we got here, how we can get out of this dark time.
Right on, my man. Well, thanks so much for your time today, and keep on rocking in the free world.
Okay, thank you.